We're so blessed that you've joined us at Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. We are with Hannah and Taylor again, and Miss Tara, and myself, Sandy, and we are continuing on in Exodus 12, 27 through 51. And if you tuned in last time, I don't know, it was great. Tara talked about how God uses the plagues to attack their God, and also the symbolization of leaven as evil, and she gave a scripture. And, a critical point that worship and obedience and belief should not be driven by our emotions, but our love for Jesus.
Well, God's protection and deliverance isn't based on our emotion.
True.
Mm. Yeah, that's just so beautiful to me, because that I may be scared with what's coming.
Yep.
And that's okay. God still delivers. That does not play a role in what God promises and says he will do.
And I found it really interesting how you talked about the different households and how they you know, some were emotional.
Right.
Some weren't, you know, but he still passed over.
Right.
Because they obeyed.
Right. They believed and obeyed.
Yeah, because we're all different.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful gift that he gives. All right, so we're going to read again. We're in Exodus 12. Mm-hmm. We're going to start with verse 27, and I'm going to have Hannah take over for us. I'm going to give you the TLB translation, but read first in whatever translation you have, verse 27 and 28, before you go on, and then you can begin from there.
All right. And you will reply, it is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, for he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt. And though he struck the Egyptians, he spared our families. When Moses had finished speaking, all the people bowed down to the ground and worshipped. Right up here.
Yeah.
And that night at midnight, Jehovah killed all the firstborn sons in the land of Egypt, from Pharaoh's oldest son to the oldest son of the captive in the dungeon. Also all the firstborn of the cattle. Pharaoh and his officials and all the people of Egypt got up in the night, and there was bitter crying throughout all the land of Egypt, for there was not a house where someone had not died. And Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron during the night and said, "Leave us, please go away, all of you. Go and serve Jehovah as you said. Take your flocks and herds and be gone, and oh, give me a blessing as you go." And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people of Egypt at Israel to get them out of the land as quickly as possible, for they said, "We are as good as dead." The Israelites took with them their bread dough without yeast and bound their kneading troughs into their spare clothes and carried them on their shoulders. And the people of Israel did as Moses said and asked the Egyptians for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. And the Lord gave the Israelites favor with the Egyptians so that they gave them whatever they wanted. And the Egyptians were practically stripped of everything they owned. That night, the people of Israel left Ramses and starts for Succoth. There were 600,000 of them, besides all the women and children going on foot. People of various sorts went with them, and there were flocks and herds, a vast exodus of cattle. When they stopped to eat, they baked bread from the yeastless dough they had brought along. It was useless because the people were pushed out of Egypt and didn't have time to wait for bread to rise to take with them on the trip. The sons of Jacob and their descendants had lived in Egypt 430 years, and it was on the last day of the 430th year that all of Jehovah's people left the land. This night was selected by the Lord to bring his people out of the land of Egypt. So the same night was selected as the day of the annual celebration of God's deliverance. Then Jehovah said to Moses and Aaron, "These are the rules concerning the observance of the Passover. No foreigners shall eat the lamb, but any slave who has been purchased may eat of it if he has been circumcised. A hired servant or a visiting foreigner may not eat of it. You shall, of all of you who eat each lamb, eat it together in one house, and not carry it outside, and you shall not break any of its bones. All the congregation of Israel shall observe this memorial at the same time. As for foreigners, if they are living with you and want to observe the Passover with you, let all the males be circumcised, and then they may come and celebrate with you. Then they shall be just as though they had been born among you. But no uncircumcised person shall ever eat the lamb. The same law applies to those born in Israel and to foreigners living among you." So the people of Israel followed all of Jehovah's instructions to Moses and Aaron. That very day, the Lord brought out the people of Israel from the land of Egypt, wave after wave of them crossing the border.
Wow. Okay. This is so cool. All right. So what we have to understand is that I want to go back and point out that so he's calling them out, and they are going, and they are not able to take their bread with leaven. And so not having leavened bread means that he's calling them out to be unleavened. Mm-hmm. So what was the symbolism we had for what does leaven represent?
Evil.
And so let's say if there was a person who was like, well, I really don't want to have bread that's not leaven, by doing it the way that it happened, so that it happened quickly, they had no choice. They had to get up there. They weren't able to take the leaven. Mm-hmm. So even if their heart was to take the leaven, God removed their ability by making it happen quickly. Mm-hmm. And so symbolically, he is showing them, I want you to be a people that walk away from evil. He's calling them to moral purity. He is calling them out of all the false gods, all the idols, all that is in the land of Egypt, to be a people that will worship him as the one true God, and to leave behind everything that would represent what they had in the 430 years in Egypt. And so that's a huge symbolism that he's given them. The other thing that was kind of cool is that scientifically, Taylor and Hannah, you two will enjoy this because I know you both are really good about keeping things together. The bacteria that would occur in the leaven, that as they would knead the bread, what they did was they would keep a batch and they would always pull a batch and put it into the next one. And so the leaven for an entire year would move from one kneaded dough to the next. So bacteria, every single time that it may have collected it, will go from one batch to the next. So by commemorating the Passover at least once a year, they have to start off without leavened bread. And so that eliminates scientifically the bacteria they would have been passing. And so it also provided them a protection that they didn't even or know or aware of. But, you know, when you have doctors and scientists looking, so that was one of those things that was like, oh, I need to share that with this because I knew you two would get a kick out of that. Especially since I have had my kombucha explode, which is the, you know, bacteria. Yeah. That's so funny. That's another story. Sometime you should ask me about that, people on the radio. It's not a good thing. All right. So the mass of people that went, I wanted to give us a breakdown. Now, this is taken from Adams Clark commentary. I liked the way that he has it broken down. There are many others that have it broken down in different ways. You have to understand they can only do estimates, but this is how he estimates the number of people. And this is just incredible. So he says, suppose we're going to make a rough calculation. So you need to know this is a rough calculation, but it is estimated, and they believe that this number is actually small. They estimate 2 million people left. That is the estimation.
That's a lot of people.
And historically, it is said to have been the largest mass of people to immigrate to a new place ever, historically. Like, there has never been, since this time, one that matched what occurred on that particular exodus. They said, Scripture says that it was effective men. So effective men, they were 20 years old and upward. That is where they would start doing the count age-wise. And Scripture tells us 600,000. Two-thirds of whom, they guess, would have had spouses based on, you know, just looking at populations and population rates and stuff. And so they would have had approximately 400,000 wives along. Then on average, a family back then would have 5 children. Most would have more in the 10 or more range. There were some that were barren and couldn't or would only get 1 or 2. And so the average number of children they would have would be about 5. And so children that would fall in the category under 20 years of age, they estimate falls considerably short of the number of children each family might have actually had, but they're going to go, they're trying to be conservative, and they did it based on having children up to 75 years of age, but they had people that lived much longer than that, and so they just stopped it at that. They estimate that upwards 600,000 effective men, a period of 196 years, it's just the number of children just shoots the number up incredibly. I think it was 200,000. And then the Levites, who were probably not included among the effective men, as in like the priests, 45,000. Then you have to include their wives, 33,000. Then you have to include their children. They estimate about 165,000. And then the mixed multitude, they estimate it would have been around 20,000 people. And they don't give the description on how they came up to that number. So they say it could have been as close to 3,263,000. But most of the things reference about 2 million. This one is just showing how they show that it actually could have been larger than the 2 million. They're just trying to be conservative because they can only estimate. How crazy is that? That includes the cattle and the supplies, the gold, the silver. Mm-hmm. And so no wonder he realized, oh, I'm an idiot. What have I done? We just sent out our entire workforce. Who's going to do? Because they're all accustomed to the nation of Israel doing everything, and now they're gone. That's why he ran out after them. And God's like, no, let me show you what I will do. Red Sea swallows them.
Yep.
But crazy to think on that massive number of people. Is that bizarre or what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I wanted us to have the estimates there. So now we'll get to looking at Pharaoh. We've been trying for quite a while. So think on Pharaoh, and I want you to think on his attitude, his heart condition, every aspect. Tell me everything that you can think of that you would describe about Pharaoh. I'll give you one. He's stubborn.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. What else? What could you say about Pharaoh?
Well, by the people of his culture, they held him as a god, and he definitely felt like God in everything that he did because of the way that he would either tell Moses to go away or to come to him. So he even ordered Moses around, and kind of whatever he said usually went, and so he was very used to getting his way and being in control of everything.
Mm. That's good. I wrote proud on. That's good. How about you, Sandy or Taylor? How would you describe Pharaoh?
Well, I think anybody that enslaves people, he has a mean streak, you know, because who does that, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And he was known for being
mean.
Yeah.
Mm. Cruel. Yeah. Maybe cruel is a better
cruel
word.
Cruel is definitely a word that would be used to describe him.
Mm. Yeah, and you could see how the devil was working in everything that he did. And
right.
Mm-hmm. What he did, too.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I when I was thinking on Pharaoh, I was just like, okay, he has the best of the best. Mm. He is the king of Egypt, essentially. So gold, silver, frankincense, myrrh, all the things, all the stuffs that has all the food that is needed. If he lifts his hand, a person's life is granted or a person's life is taken. He is the one that determined what people did. So as you were saying, Hannah, that if he spoke, it happened. But even with all of that, he was so annoyed and frustrated by Moses. Mm-hmm. Now, isn't that interesting? He has everything you could possibly want.
Yep.
Moses.
He had the earthly wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That people lust for.
Moses got his goat.
Yep.
And knew where it was tied, and like he couldn't do anything about it. And the sad thing is you got to remember, they grew up together.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the movie that we watch, it depicts that they were close at one point. We don't know. I have no idea. We have no idea if they were or weren't, if they were at odds with each other as children or if they were friends.
And, you know, at the end or in the middle when he let the people go, he wanted to be blessed. You know, I found that interesting.
And why do you think that he asked that? That is something that I wanted us to look at.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I think he saw things that were going on, you know, and I think at one time he thought about maybe there is a real God, and this real God can bless me because he's blessing these people. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I just found that when I was reading it again this week, just like, and he wanted to be blessed. So he didn't really think he was blessed with all this earthly stuff.
Well, and he's lost his firstborn son that represented life, fertility, and prosperity. So he has just lost his ability to produce life, fertility, and prosperity.
His God's.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so that's been removed. So he needs to have that restored. And commentators say, I mean, everything from, you know, this is his confession of believing in the one true God, not to the point of salvation, obviously, right, but acknowledgement, where it's an intellectual assessment of yes. But it most likely was based on he had lost what had been viewed as the one that was the source of giving him life, fertility, and prosperity, because it all came through your firstborn. And pretty much the scriptures tell us at some point, like, we know he had another child, but I don't know how many children he had. Historically, I don't know that I have read that, or if I have, I haven't paid attention to it. I'd be curious to see. I also saw that he had to humble himself. That when it comes to the Lord's workings, he was made to humble himself. And so one commentator said that he was actually doing a work. So where he says, I have hardened Pharaoh's heart, he will do this, and then I will keep hardening. It's because God is doing a work to soften Pharaoh's heart and to get Pharaoh ready. And so God's approach of reaching Pharaoh was to get his mind informed. So the plagues were the form of informing him, okay, to get his mind intellectually, yes, engaged. And then the next thing was to break his will, because a person's heart does not get soft unless their heart is broken.
True.
And he's trying to get him to the point of breaking his will before God. Now, when he goes after Israel, we see that he has not truly broken. He just did it out of frustration, right? Like, go, give me a blessing.
Anger.
Go. Yeah. But it wasn't because he had a belief or anything. So that's kind of crazy, isn't it? The other things that I saw that was incredible was that Pharaoh did have to acknowledge that God was bigger than him. And we need to finish that next time. God bless.